Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Did social media really start the right wing losing its mind, or was it something else? Well, let's bring in Reese Peck to talk about it. He's an associate professor at the Department of Media, Culture, and College of Staten Island. He's also the author of Fox Populism, Branding Conservatism as Working Class. They certainly did do that, and it's nothing but a lie. And that leads us to his most recent article, Fox News and the Big Lie, A Tipping Point. So, Reese, welcome, and tell me this, Reese. Is this the idea that digital media, hey, that's the real problem, and if we didn't have the Facebook algorithms, et cetera, we wouldn't have had QAnon and the right-wing lunacy that we've seen pop up, or no?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, as the discussion has exploded, right, about disinformation in the wake of the Trump presidential victory in 2016, it's become a cottage industry, right, where people are kind of looking toward technology as the culprit, and specifically the internet and social media. But I would argue that really the starting point of the kind of populist partisan news style, it was not social media, it was not the internet, it was cable news. And specifically, it was Fox News who innovated this style and changed the entire news media ecosystem around its own rules, right? Its own branding rules as conservatives, as, you know, for the people against the elites. And what has happened is the algorithms have subsequently amplified those styles and picks up on those cues. So it picks up on kind of stylistic cues that Fox News put in place long before social media. So I would argue that, you know, the content that works the best on the internet is content that mimics Fox's style.
Yeah, I feel like the establishment is always behind, like unbelievably behind. I remember when Fox News came out in 96, everybody said, oh my God, that's never going to work. This is so partisan. And, you know, and they're taking a side and they're, you know, they're not dispassionate. What on God's green earth gave them the idea that dispassionate is what people wanted in entertainment and media?
Right. You know, I think that liberals to this day, even after witnessing the immense success of the conservative media revolution of the last three decades, they still are inflexibly wedded to this idea that you have to, you know, perform the news like Walter Cronkite and be a emotionally detached professional, a good professional, and that'll give you authority. But Fox News shows that you can gain authority by creating relatable personalities, by people showing, whether you could say it's contrived or sincere, but emotion, right? Actually, you know, trying to express they care about the news topic, right? They're enraged for you. They're fighting for you in the kind of media space. And I think there's appeal for that that is doesn't necessarily have to attract conservatives, right? But I think as is, the way the kind of centrist or liberal kind of media market is set up is they're averse to that kind of emotional display, that kind of vigor, that confrontational style. And that's why I think your program for, you know, to be honest, is so interesting, because I think it breaks from that usual kind of middle brow, emotionally muted mode that liberal news outlets tend to adopt and market.
Reese, let me run a theory by you. I call mainstream media and right-wing media together corporate media, because in reality, they're on the same team. Right. So right. On social and cultural issues, sure, they disagree. But the disagreement is kind of a distraction. It's to say, oh, squirrel, like, oh my God, transgender people in bathrooms, go, right? Mr. Potato Head, everybody fight. Critical race theory, fight, right? But on economic issues, we've shown on this show over and over again, Fox News hosts, MSNBC hosts, and CNN hosts always agree. Almost always agree, okay? And so I think that they're playing good cop, bad cop. So the right wing is doing like the emotional stuff, passion, etc. And the mainstream media is kind of lying down on purpose because they want to lose on economic issues, right? So like an example, and then I'm broaching into politics, but Biden, for example, pretending he was in favor of $15 minimum wage, he got into office 2 weeks later. He said, oh yeah, we're probably going to lose on that. Before he did even bother to count votes, that he didn't even, because he was planning to lose. Democrats are good cops, Republicans are bad cops. Fox News is bad cop, CNN is good cop. But they're actually pushing the same economic agenda. That's why shows like ours that are passionate about actually standing up for people are considered the only thing that's outsiders and not acceptable. So what do you think about that theory?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, you can go back to, you know, sociological studies of newsrooms going back to the 1970s, like Herbert Gans did this classic study called Deciding What's News. And he showed that journalists are generally fiscally conservative. They can be hostile to labor unions, right? Even back then, let alone after the Reagan Revolution and how much our country slanted right, especially on economic issues with the devastation of the labor movement. So it's not as if the press has ever been really friendly to like leftist politics, if you define that by like social democratic or socialist positions. Those positions have always been marginalized and suffocated and erased generally by so-called liberal news organizations. So I'm with you there. And honestly, it's hard if you're critical of capitalism and you're a media player that has to exist within a commercial system, you're kind of on an uphill battle. I don't think it's impossible, by the way. I think too often, you know, I think leftist media activists assume that you can't be popular in the commercial space by making certain anti-corporate critiques. I don't think that's true. But yeah, in terms of funding and in terms of, you know, respectability, what major news network are you associated with? It's hard to, as Chomsky famously kind of argued, it's hard to even get a seat at the table if you espouse those kind of views. So I'd agree with you, but I think there's a lot of potential in the left kind of online alternative space where people have shown, like your news organization, that you can build a fairly large audience and in fact wield political power as well. But I do think the resources and the kind of, you know, the reputational games they play are stacked against alternative left media.
100%, because capital goes towards other capital, right? So, for example, Fox News started in 96. Actually, TYT started in 2002. So Fox News is only 6 years older than us. But what was the difference between us two? It wasn't who's more popular and has a more interesting ideas. We, with almost no resources, we compete. We're one of the very, very few media organizations that compete with Fox News online in terms of video views. So we're both at the top. We're both very popular. But the difference is, Murdoch invested $450 million in the Fox News before it ever turned a profit. And the left wing, the actual left wing, not the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party, in my opinion, and the mainstream media are fake left. That's a good cop, bad cop game that they're playing. Meanwhile, they both have the same corporate agenda. But if you're in the left, it's not easy to come by $450 million. And and that's how this game is played.
Yeah, no, I mean, arguably spent more than that. I mean, some people quoted it $600 million or $500 million. And just like that, CNN also. I mean, anytime you try to launch a cable television network, it's extremely expensive. CNN bled money for 6 years. Guess how long Fox News bled money? 6 years. So they were in the red for 6 years. That's how much upfront capital you have to even make it on the cable dial, right? So I agree with you 100%, but I do think sometimes left media strategists or left or entrepreneurs or media creators in the kind of left space focus so much on the resources that, and they don't think enough about how powerful just creating a style, a compelling style can be, and embracing kind of alternative news anchor styles. And so even, you know, leftists, even lacking the resources, they still in some ways tie their hands by still performing this kind of middle brow, we're smarter than the right, snarky, you know, style that I don't think helps them grow into something that could be a more financially feasible news operation.
Yeah. So look, I believe in using jujitsu. So if we're in the capitalist game, then let's play the capitalist game and let's win it so that we can get our message out. But a true populist message. The reason CNN's never going to do that, they're never going to have passionate anchors who are fighting for you, is because they don't want to fight for you. They want to fight for their advertisers who bring them the money. And who are their advertisers? All giant corporations. And by the way, also corrupt politicians. So that's also how that game is played. But one more thing about that, Reese. So you talk about in your piece the idea that Democrats basically don't get it, right? That they are losing populism to the right wing. That the right wing is now considered populist. And it's absolutely true. Like, I was driving through Florida just a couple of days ago when I was on a break, and, you know, we see, like, an RV park, right? And in the old days, that would have been filled with Democratic voters. Now, as we looked at it, me and a bunch of guys that had gone on that trip, we're like, I'm not sure you could find a single Democratic voter in that trailer park anymore. And that's amazing. Isn't it amazing how the right wing stole the idea of populism, even though they represent the rich exclusively, and the schmucks in the mainstream media and the Democratic Party never even figured that out?
Yeah, I think it's a very complicated phenomenon. So that's part of the story that you're talking about, the way they kind of have repackaged the business class and CEOs as like super workers. They're just like the working class, right? I talk a lot about that in my book, when I talk about job creators, how important that rhetoric was, and how Trump is an extension of that same kind of businessman, populist. But I think it's also partly to blame on the way that the Democratic Party in the 70s shifted away from labor, right? Where labor used to be the symbolic center of the Democratic Party, from FDR all the way to, you know, Nixon. But very conscious, the Nixon team, of trying to repackage the Republican Party as a working class party. They were seen at that time as the country club party, as the party for the rich for years, right? And so I think, liberal media and the Democratic Party, they need to broaden their horizon, who they imagine they want to appeal to, because often, I think, again, they're inflexibly committed to appealing to college-educated, upper-income people in their new strategies. And I think because they're not contesting the broad working class, the broad multiracial working class, younger working class, and trying to create styles of media that would appeal to those groups are falling to the right, right? And so if you're not speaking to them, someone else will. And there's few examples where their media marketing strategies really try to throw a wrench in this association of conservatives, populists, liberals, intellectual. The only strategy I've seen recently was the Fetterman campaign, which I thought was genius, that it turned all those associations on their head, painting Oz as the out of touch, you know, Hollywood elite. So there's no reason liberals can't recode this stuff, or progressives can't recode some of these populist tropes as leftists. Right. It's shocking to see Tucker Carlson and Fox News, even today, they're starting to refer to their opposition and their competitors as the corporate media. So even corporate Fox News, right, a giant corporation, is trying to say that if you're against corporate greed, like on Tucker Carlson, that's a conservative position. So never underestimate their ability to take something you would assume is obviously leftist, right, and recode it as conservative to their audience and even newer audiences. I mean, he's attracting young Democrats to his show, right? Which should set alarm bells to Democratic strategists and media creators. So yeah, it's frustrating for me to see liberals fall for this game over and over again, where they accept the conservative imagination of America and its mapping of the media environment. And you know, again, it's why I'm interested in looking at any left media organization that is not playing that game.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you from personal experience that when we suggest that they should go progressive and populist, whether it's media or politics, the general reaction we get from, you know, Democratic Party, mainstream media, et cetera, is total shock. Like, they think it's beneath them, and they think it's populism is a terrible thing, and it should be avoided at all costs. Well, if you're going to paint yourself as the elitist pricks, people are going to think you're elitist pricks. It's the world's worst politics. Fetterman proved it 100% wrong. Did they learn any lessons? Of course not, because they're literally paid not to learn those lessons. So, Reese, great points all around, and the book that he mentioned there is Fox Populism, Branding Conservatism as Working Class. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. Politicians from both sides of the aisle go to the National Prayer Breakfast, but should they? Well, let's talk about it. We're going to bring in Annie Laurie Gaylor. She is the co-president and co-founder of Freedom From Religion Foundation, and also Nadia Dutchin. She's executive director of the American Humanist Association. Welcome.
Hello.
All right. Hello. Thank you so much.
Yeah, great to see you guys. So you guys have put together a letter saying that people should not go to the National Prayer Breakfast, and that is a tradition I've seen in American politics my whole life, where it's Democrats and Republicans mm-hmm. go and they, you know, kumbaya and praying together, and it's supposed to be benign and non-political and just bringing people together. Annie Laurie, let me start with you. Is that true, or is that a cover for what they're actually doing?
It really is a cover. It's very inappropriate, first of all, because it looks like it's a governmental event. It's called the National Prayer Breakfast. It's kind of a gotcha issue where if politicians and presidents don't show up, they don't look pious enough. But what is the worst thing about it is put on by this very untransparent group called the Fellowship or the Family that has ties over the years to dictators, profoundly anti-LGBTQ public officials, started as an anti-New Deal thing, became a very Cold War group, and it wants to say it's bipartisan. It wants to use Democrats as cover for its agenda, which is to really network and promote Christian nationalism.
So, Nadia, do you have examples of what kind of Christian nationalism that they push behind the scenes?
You know, these are the folks who are, you know, a part of the religious right, and they're behind book bans and bans on reproductive care and direct attacks on transgender young people's health care, dignity, and safety. This breakfast is not at all benign, as Annie Laurie said. It's, you know, it's quite insidious. And, you know, the idea that this is something that our elected officials who are supposed to be serving all of us, this is something that they should attend. It's absolutely the last thing in the last place that they should be.
Yeah. So Annie Laurie, I know we broke a couple of stories at TYT about this National Prayer Breakfast. And there's a ton of stuff. There's the Marie Butina, the Russian spy that was invited and was working our politicians, etc. They radicalized Mike Lindell. They're the guys who did that. I mean, how nonpartisan can you be if you radicalize Mike Lindell, right? But I'll tell you, the one that concerned me the most is their activism against the LGBTQ community throughout the world. And so how can Democrats go to something that doesn't? So for folks who don't know, give us some sense of what they do behind the scenes that is outrageous.
Well, they put on this event. It is primarily, the primary financial sponsor these days is Franklin Graham, the Reverend Franklin Graham. And he openly admits it's for influence peddling, getting an entree into Congress. They have this very pious gathering where often and frequently the president shows up, and Biden showed up last year. But then after the prayer breakfast, they have all these closed door meetings. And that is what I think some good people, liberal people in Congress who don't really realize what's going on, are getting hoodwinked. They show up for the public appearance, but then all of the nefarious stuff goes on afterward behind the scenes. And when you talk about the anti-LGBTQ, for example, the groups that were pushing the death penalty for being gay in Uganda were associated with the fellowship and the family. We had Papa Doc welcomed. We've had Suharto from Indonesia, all kinds of dictators. And in my opinion, what's the most dangerous is that what they're really going to be promoting is Christian nationalism dictatorship here in the United States.
Yeah, I'm very worried about that for sure. So now, Nadia, Salon's done some great reporting on this organization. Certainly Jeff Charlotte has. But after we did our reporting, we asked a number of Democrats if they were going to still attend, and a number of them said no. So Ro Khanna, Ted Lieu backed away, and then Ann Kirkpatrick. And then surprisingly, I was actually very surprised that we had this kind of effect there combined, Nancy Pelosi and Tim Kaine backed out. So that's
right.
Really
last
great.
Year.
Yeah, last year. So that's right. Really great progress. But Nadia, there's this quote from one of the members that was the organizers of their events where they said, quote, "We had more influence as long as we can keep a couple of Democrats in the fold." And so how important is it to get those Democratic holdouts like President Biden to realize that this is a right-wing group and not a tent?
Right. You know, it's extremely important that President Biden and other people who may very well attend on their own, it's very important for them not to go. You know, this group has, as Annalee Laurie said, it's, you know, it has ties to dictators and is extremely anti-LGBTQ. All of our elected officials, especially those who care to be accountable to their constituents, especially those who are not Christian nationalists, should absolutely reject the invitation to go and should not show up at all. I mean, they're there to represent all of the people. And at this breakfast, we don't see our Jewish and Muslim friends. We most certainly do not see our secular community represented there. They are not representing the American people, and this is patently undemocratic.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're going to do a prayer breakfast, I'm an atheist. I signed this letter. I think it's a great letter. I totally agree. I don't hide my activism. I don't hide my beliefs. I think that so-called reporters who say they don't have an opinion are not being honest with you, right? So my opinion is clear, and I'm not going to get invited to this breakfast. I get it, okay? But why aren't Muslims and Jews invited and Buddhists and Hindus? Why are only Christians allowed to pray?
I mean, well, you know, once in a while they do invite a nominal rabbi, usually a very, very conservative one, and so on. They'll do a little bit of window dressing, but it's always dominated by white Christians, and usually conservative Christians are the ones who have put it on. And what they try to do is get some Democrats and some Republicans to be co-chairs. And we are particularly hoping that Chris Coons, for example, this year, will boycott the National Prayer Breakfast, will wake up and realize he's being used and other people are being used by a group that is unsavory, that they should not want to lend their endorsement to, and that is causing problems all around the world.
Well, there's another problem, which is that some Democrats are actually very, very conservative. So I'm not sure Chris Coons disagrees with their agenda. By the way, there's an easy way for Chris Coons to prove that he doesn't agree with their agenda: by not attending. Okay, but everyone who goes is signing up for it. And if they were really non-denominational and invited everybody, they would invite progressive Christians and Jews and Muslims, etc. I'll believe it when I see a progressive imam start this by going Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, ashhadu an la ilaha illallah. Okay, but you're not going to see that. Okay, you're not going to see.
I think they've had one imam once, but again, yeah. Window dressing.
Window dressing, and always right wing. Always right wing.
And also secretive. Right. Why do they never tell us who's going to be there, and why do we never learn until the last minute whether the president will attend? It's just shrouded in secrecy.
So, guys, that keeps going back to the same question. What's wrong with these Democrats? I mean, look, we're guessing, right? I'm not in the room with Joe Biden and Dr. Jill Biden as they make these decisions and Chris Coons, et cetera. But These folks are definitely anti-LGBTQ. They've been infiltrated by the Russians. They converted Mike Lindell into a rabid right winger. It's funded by Franklin Graham, one of the most right wing zealots in the country. I mean, what is it? Do you think Biden doesn't know, or he does know and doesn't mind? What is going on here?
He might mind, but he's grown up in a country where politicians have been coached to wear religion on their sleeves, and where you do not offend religion, where if you're invited to a religious event to pray, you show up. It's that gotcha issue. And it's also that the president and the courts and Congress have not caught up with the changing demographics, that a third of Americans, adult Americans today, are nuns, atheists, agnostics, or nothing in particular. And we don't care to have pious politicians. We don't elect them to be our pastor in chief. They're supposed to be solving problems here on earth. But I think it's just this long-standing tradition in our country never to offend religion, always to wear religion on your shirt sleeves.
Yeah, I must have missed that memo. Okay, Nadia, but this is not just secular groups that are objecting now. So who else has signed the letter that's saying, no, we're part of the coalition to make sure people don't attend this?
There are quite a few pastors that have joined the coalition, and many of them are themselves LGBTQ. And, you know, they are standing in the fact that this breakfast and the people who attend and the things that they talk about don't represent them, and are actually, they manifest policies that can be harmful to everyone, not just the LGBTQ community. So there are quite a few people who are Christian pastors who are a part of this coalition that are objecting to this event.
All right, great. And Annie Laurie, is there anything that viewers can do or others can do to, you know, at least shed a light on this to get to the right answer?
Well, absolutely. You can contact your member of Congress and say, I hope you're not planning to go to this prayer breakfast. And we can make it easy at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. You can go to our news link. There's an action alert, and we have a national action alert where you input your name and address, and it will go out to your members of Congress.
All right. Excellent. Annie Laurie Gaylor and Nadia Dutchin, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. And thank you for bringing light onto an issue that is often shrouded in secrecy.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.